If you are really serious about getting rich in America, the time to start doing something about it is now. Financial planning is the tool that you use to get from where you are to the financial independence that you desire. In this session, we're going to talk about various investment strategies and concepts that you must know if you're going to build an estate and retire wealthy. The three legs of the financial planning stool are savings, insurance, and investments. So let's begin with savings and insurance. How much do you need? The basic rule with regard to savings is you must put aside 10 to 20% of your income until you have 2 to 6 months of expenses stored away in some form of liquid investment. A liquid investment is one that you can turn into cash very quickly, like money market funds, savings accounts, certificates of deposit, or even some mutual funds. You need enough life insurance to protect your loved ones should something happen to you. You should calculate how much your family would require to maintain its standard of living if you died unexpectedly. Then, purchase enough life insurance so that the interest from the life insurance proceeds would be sufficient for your family to live on. For example, if your family needs $50,000 per year after taxes, and you could earn a return of 10% per annum on the invested proceeds, then you would purchase a $500,000 life insurance policy payable to your spouse or to your estate. In your 20s and 30s, the best value in life insurance is term insurance. Term insurance is issued on an annual basis, and because it has no cash buildup value, it is relatively inexpensive if you're in good health. As you move into your 40s, you need permanent insurance. Permanent insurance is more expensive, but it has a cash buildup value and it can never be canceled once issued. With permanent insurance, your estate will receive the face value of the policy in full whenever you die. If you have a family, you should speak to an insurance agent and become fully aware of your options and your obligations. The third leg of the financial planning stool is investments. The three variable factors in any investment are safety, liquidity, and growth. There is a trade-off between these three factors. If the investment has a high degree of safety, it usually has a low possibility for growth. Likewise with liquidity. If it has a high degree of liquidity, it usually has low possibilities for growth. The investments with the greatest possibility for safe upside return are usually highly non-liquid, like income-producing real estate, which takes a long time to buy and often a long time to sell. Each person has to choose an investment portfolio that is comfortable with regard to the amount of risk involved. You must decide this for yourself. The affluent in America, the wealthy, including self-made millionaires, have most of their money in the following five places. First, because most wealthy people achieve their wealth as a result of starting and building their own businesses, most of the affluent have their money tied up in the same companies. Most senior executives of America's largest corporations have most of their net worth tied up in the stock of the companies that they manage. If you have less than $100,000, the very best place for you to invest your money is back into the same place where you made your money in the first place. The very best place for most business owners to invest is back into their own businesses or their own industries where they have high levels of familiarity and expertise. The second major investment vehicle for the affluent in America is commercial real estate. That is, income-producing office buildings, apartment buildings, industrial parks, shopping centers, and even strip shopping centers. Thousands of Americans have made and kept their fortunes by careful and systematic investments in commercial real estate. It is an excellent long-term investment, especially if you take the time to select it carefully and purchase it on the right terms, as we discussed in the previous session. The third place that the affluent store their money is in raw land held for development. The things to consider in purchasing raw land are, number one, top of the list, where is the water going to come from? Land can only be developed if it has an adequate water supply. The second consideration is transportation. How easy is it to get to the land? The third consideration is nearby population centers. Where are the people going to come from? You see, raw land only appreciates in value as the population of the area increases. As we said before, some land will never increase in value in 100 years because it lacks either water, transportation access, or population pressures. The fourth place that the affluent park their money is in treasury bills, money market accounts, and other high-interest liquid investments. Serious money in America is not speculative money. It is careful, conservative money. The fifth investment vehicle used by the affluent is blue chip stocks, purchased for the long haul. Serious investors in the stock market, as we will discuss in a moment, are what they call value investors. They carefully research a stock and then purchase it based on the underlying fundamental values. They then hold the stock for the long term, ignoring the day-to-day fluctuations of the stock market. Now, assuming that you're properly insured and that you have sufficient savings put aside to carry you for 2 to 6 months, let's look at some of the places where you can put your money as you accumulate it. There are three places where you can park your savings and enjoy high degrees of safety and high liquidity. The first is a money market account. This is available at your bank and pays higher rates of interest than a savings account or passbook account. But it also requires a minimum balance. Money market accounts between banks are usually quite competitive, so look around, and as soon as your savings account balance exceeds $2,000 or $3,000, move it into a money market account at a higher rate of interest. The second savings instrument you may consider is a certificate of deposit, referred to as a CD. These are issued by banks, savings and loans, and other financial institutions for periods of time ranging from 30 days up to 10 years. The longer you lock up your funds, usually the higher the interest rate you will receive. The weakness with CDs is that if you need your money back before the date of maturity, there are often serious penalties. CDs pay higher interest rates than money market accounts and are safe places to put your savings, but they are less flexible than the third option, which is government savings bonds. Government savings bonds are the most conservative of investments. They are safe, secure, and they pay reasonable rates of interest, and they are easily negotiable if you need the money back at any time. They are backed by the full credit of the United States government. In other words, you can't lose on them unless the entire United States government goes broke. Now let's talk about the stock market. There are three major stock markets in the United States. They are the New York Stock Exchange, the American Stock Exchange, and the Pacific Stock Exchange. The stock exchanges are run by stock brokerage firms. These are companies who come together in their respective exchanges to make a market for publicly traded stocks and bonds. Most of the trading that you hear about or read about is in what is called common stock. A share of common stock in a company like IBM represents a share of ownership in that company. Ownership of stock entitles you to share in the risk and the reward, both of which can be significant. Your ownership of a company is proportional to the number of shares that you own relative to the number of shares that the company has issued. For example, if the company has 1 million shares issued and you own one share, then you are entitled to share in 1/1,000,000th of the profits or losses of the company. You are actually an owner when you purchase stock. Here are some important things for you to consider if you're thinking about trading in the stock market. First of all, in order for you to buy a share of stock, someone else has to be willing to sell a share of stock. Every time a trade takes place, the seller of the stock is betting that the stock will not go up. The purchaser is betting against the seller that the stock will go up. In this way, stock market trading is a zero-sum game, with each purchaser or seller betting his or her knowledge against the other. Unless your knowledge of the stock and the stock market is superior to that of the people whose whole lives are spent working in the market, it is very dangerous to believe that you can outguess them. Stock prices are largely determined by the expectations that the market has for the future profitability of the company issuing the stock. Since expectations are volatile and constantly fluctuating with every new piece of information, stock prices can change dramatically up or down in a matter of days or even hours. It is worthwhile noting that the very best financial minds in the world spend 40 to 60 hours each week studying the stock market and making investment recommendations. In spite of this, more than 50% of the recommendations of the stock market experts are wrong. Just to avoid making mistakes, much less to pick stocks correctly, you must spend an enormous amount of time and energy studying the market, studying the individual industry, and studying the individual company in the industry that you're thinking of investing in. Now, here's an important point. Most salespeople for stock brokerage firms work on straight commission and are selling exactly what they are told to sell. The person you speak to on the phone usually knows little or nothing about the stock he or she is recommending. Their jobs are to make up to 200 calls per day and to sell whatever their management has told them to sell on that particular day. Most registered representatives are not a source of investment advice. If you take their advice, you must know that you are throwing dice with your eyes closed. You are gambling with your money. A good friend of mine, a multimillionaire who earned every penny himself through savings and investments, is often contacted by investment advisors, recommending that he put his money into something that they're selling. In each case, he invites the investment advisor to come and see him personally. During the personal visit, he asks the investment advisor about his own net worth. He says that he does not believe in taking advice from people who are worth less than he is. His experience with investment advisors has been consistent. In almost every case, he finds that they know very little about what they are selling and that they have not bought any of it themselves. He has never found a financially successful investment advisor, at least not one who is as successful as he is. Most of these investment advisors finally confess that he would be unwise to invest with them. There is a moral to this story that is important to you, and here it is. Almost all the money that is made in the stock market, with very few exceptions, is made by the people buying and selling stocks on commission. Very little is made by the actual investors. In one 22-year study tracking 1,500 men and women, 83 of whom became millionaires, the researcher found that not a single person in the study became wealthy investing in the stock market. In fact, one of the main reasons why most of the people in the study were still struggling financially after 22 years was because they had lost so much money investing their savings in the stock market. Another point to remember is that when the stock market turns down or the financial markets soften, the same people who are giving investment advice are often thrown out of work by the thousands and often find themselves unemployable or going to work in other fields. This is not to say that there are not many fine, honorable men and women in the field of financial planning and investment counseling. It's just to say that there are also enormous numbers of people in these fields from whom it would be dangerous for you to accept advice. Remember, the only thing easy about money is losing it. However, if you are interested in investing in the stock market, there is a lot of good advice available. One of the most successful stock market speculators in history was a man named Bernard Baruch. Bernard Baruch started his career as a runner on Wall Street and ended up as one of the richest and most respected men in America, an advisor to four presidents. In his book, My Own Story, here is his advice for evaluating a company's stock before investing in it. First, examine the real assets of the company, the cash in excess of its indebtedness, and the value of its physical properties. Learn how to read a financial statement so that you can clearly understand the assets and liabilities of the company. Remember that you are thinking of paying a certain amount of money for a share in that company. You need to know exactly what it is you are buying. Second, ask, does this company make a product or perform a service that people want or must have? The most important time period in considering an investment in a company is the future. The future of any company is determined by how good and how much in demand their products and services are and will be. McDonald's, for example, is a good stock because over the years what it is selling has been in increasing demand. The third key way of evaluating a company's stock is to assess the quality of its management. This is especially important in evaluating whether the company is going to grow in the future. Today, venture capitalists, those who invest in new companies, look to the quality of management as the most important single ingredient in investment success. If the right people are in charge, they will find a way to make the company successful in most cases. There are two popular ideas in the stock market that you will hear about. The first is called contrarian theory. Contrarian theory says that the best time to buy a stock is when nobody else wants the stock or when everyone else is selling. This is both partially true and partially false. Sometimes when everyone else is selling the stock, there's a very good reason for it, and you should be selling too. Nonetheless, contrarian theory is a valuable tool to have at hand when thinking about where and when you will invest in the stock market. Sometimes investors pick up real bargains in what are called out-of-favor stocks, but you must do your homework. The second theory is called the greater fool theory. The greater fool theory eventually takes hold in a stock market boom. It says that no matter how much you pay for the stock, you don't have to worry because a greater fool will come along and pay you even more. The problem with the greater fool theory is that eventually the market runs out of fools. At that point, people begin to sell. As more and more people rush to sell, as they did on October 19, 1987, the entire market can collapse. The greater fool theory is also applicable to real estate. If ever you hear someone say that the only direction something can go is up, either don't buy it or sell it as fast as you can. Here are Bernard Baruch's 10 rules for investment success. Failure to follow these rules has been the reason for every single loser in the stock market. Rule number one, don't speculate unless you make it a full-time job. Remember, every decision you make is a bet against the decision of someone else who is studying the stock market 40, 50, and 60 hours per week. Rule number two, beware of anyone offering inside information or tips. The number one way to lose money in the stock market is to act on tips from people who really don't know what they're talking about, like taxi drivers and barbers. Rule number three, Before you buy a stock, find out everything about the company, its management, its competitors, its earnings, and its possibilities for growth. Be patient, be disciplined, be objective, and be unemotional. Take the time to investigate before you invest. Rule number 4. Don't try to buy at the bottom and sell at the top. This can't be done except by liars. When you buy a stock, decide at what price you will sell it, and when it hits that price, don't be greedy. Rule number 5. Learn how to take your losses quickly and cleanly. Don't expect to be right all the time. If you've made a mistake, that is, if the stock is going down, cut your losses as quickly as possible. The very best technique for cutting your losses in the stock market is what is called a stop loss. With the stop loss technique, you put in an order to sell your stock at 10% below the highest price at which you've owned the stock. For example, if you buy a stock at $25 per share, you would put in a stop loss order for $22.50, or 10% below your purchase price. If the stock went up to $30, you would move the stop loss up to $27, or 10% below the highest price that you've owned the stock. The use of the stop loss technique can minimize your losses if you have the discipline to stay with it. The 6th rule for investment success is don't buy too many securities. It is better to have only a few investments that can be watched carefully than to have too many. Diversification spreads your risks, but also eliminates any chance that you might have for major gains. Rule number 7 is make a periodic reappraisal of your investments to determine whether changes in conditions have altered their prospects. Use zero-based thinking. Always ask with new information, if I had not purchased this stock knowing what I now know, would I purchase it? If the answer is no, that is your cue to sell. Rule number 8, study your tax position carefully to know when you can sell to your greatest advantage. Be aware of the capital gains taxes that are applicable to your transactions. Remember, the only thing that counts is after-tax return to you. Rule number 9, always keep a good part of your capital in a cash reserve. Never invest all of your funds. If you do this, you will always be in a position to take advantage of unexpected opportunities that come along. You will always have an emergency reserve to act as a cushion no matter what happens in the marketplace. And rule number 10, don't try to be a jack of all investments. Stick to the field that you know best. Usually, the most successful investors are those who pick one particular industry and concentrate their time on becoming knowledgeable on the companies in that industry. Pick an industry that interests you so that you will enjoy keeping current with it. And here is some more investment advice from a man named Max Gunther. Max Gunther spent many years studying the most successful investors in the stock markets in both Europe and America. He then set down the rules he had learned from them in a book called The Zurich Axioms. Basically, here are his ideas. Number 1, if you are not a bit worried about your speculation or your investments, then you're not risking enough. You should have enough money invested so that it is a real concern to you. You are far more likely to make the right decision when you are emotionally involved because of the size of your investment. Number 2, always take your profit too soon. Conquer greed, just as Bernard Baruch says. There's a saying in the stock market that bulls make money and bears make money, but pigs never do. Number 3, distrust anyone who claims to predict the future. Since all financial outcomes are loaded with uncertainty, that is, they are essentially gambles, no one can tell you with any accuracy what is going to happen in the future with regard to any stock or investment. Everyone is guessing. Number 4, when the ship starts to sink, don't pray, jump. In other words, accept small losses cheerfully as a fact of investing life. At the very best, fully 50% of your investments will go wrong. They will actually decline in value. They will fail to realize your hopes and expectations for them. But you can still succeed in investing if you minimize your losses on the downside so that you can maximize your profits on the upside. Number 5, luck is the most powerful single factor in speculative success. Because there are no predictable patterns in investing in the stock market, in order to be successful, you need a lot of luck. A good question is, how much of your financial future are you willing to entrust to luck? Number 6, never fall in love with an investment. Never become emotionally involved in anything that you purchase with the intention of making a profit. This also includes real estate, especially your home. Many people fall in love with their investments and are reluctant to admit that they have made a mistake. They ride them all the way down into the cellar. Number 7, never confuse a hunch with a hope. Many people hope that a particular stock or investment is a good one, And then they say they have a very good hunch that it's going to go up. Consciously separate your hunches from your hopes and don't confuse the two. Number 8, optimism means expecting the best, but confidence comes from knowing how you will handle the worst. Put another way, confidence springs from the constructive use of pessimism. The method that we recommend is always to ask, what is the worst possible thing that can happen in this situation? Always be willing to face the worst possible outcome. John Paul Getty, at one time the richest man in the world, said that his secret for success in investing was to objectively assess the worst possible outcome of any business deal and then to make very sure that it didn't happen. Number 9, disregard the majority opinion. Think through every decision for yourself. Don't allow your investment decisions to be influenced by anyone else. Take the time to think it through personally and then take full responsibility for each choice that you make. And number 10, if it doesn't pay the first time, forget it. If, based on the information you have, you decide to invest in a stock and it doesn't work out, sell the stock and go on to something else. Keep your ego completely out of the equation. A self-made billionaire once told me that investment opportunities are like buses. There will always be another one along. This advice is practiced by the most successful people who have ever invested in the stock market. Remember, the stock market is highly speculative. It is dominated and controlled by people who are making their living by buying and selling stock for others. There are no foolproof ways for making money in the stock market. If you're going to invest in stocks, be careful. Do your homework and watch your investments all of the time. There is one way to invest in the stock market with minimum risk, and that is through a mutual fund. A mutual fund is a pool of money made up of the investments of thousands of individuals like yourself that is used to purchase a diversified portfolio of stocks. A mutual fund is run by professional money managers, people who make informed investment decisions, people who spend their full time in the stock market. Mutual funds are sold through stock brokerage firms, investment advisors, banks, savings and loans, and other outlets. And there are two types of mutual funds with regard to cost. The first is called a commission or a load fund. In a commission fund, you pay up to 8.5% commission, which comes out of your investment, most of which goes to the person who sold you the mutual fund. The balance of your investment is put into the portfolio of stocks. The explanation for charging an 8.5% commission is that if the fund is well managed, you will make it all back and more in a reasonable period of time. Sometimes you do, and sometimes you don't. There are also many no-load mutual funds. These are mutual funds that you can purchase through various intermediaries without paying a commission. 100% of your money is invested for you. Countless comparisons have been made over the years, and the conclusion seems to be that there is very little difference between the load and the no-load funds. They both seem to be equally well managed and perform pretty much the same. Of course, some mutual funds of both kinds are far more successful than others. As in all forms of investment, it is vital that you investigate before you invest. There are some rules with regard to investing in mutual funds. The first is that past performance is seldom an indicator of future performance, except in select cases. If your mutual fund is successful, it usually attracts an enormous amount of money and becomes so large that its funds cannot be invested to achieve the same rate of growth. By the time you hear of a very successful mutual fund, it's usually too late to get into it and enjoy the increase. On the other hand, there are certain mutual fund management companies that have long-term, above-average records of success and growth. It is not unusual for the shares in a mutual fund to increase 10, 20, 30, 40, even 50% in a good year in the stock market. Still, the very best place for the average person to invest in the stock market is through a well-selected mutual fund. Because of the diversified portfolio of stocks, the downside is limited. Unfortunately, in most cases, the upside is also limited. Most mutual funds move pretty much with the stock market as a whole. Nonetheless, mutual funds are highly liquid in that you can sell your shares and get your money back fairly quickly if you need it. The other investments that people trade in are the following. First, there's gold, silver, and precious metals. These are volatile and dangerous investments, often sold by unscrupulous people to unsuspecting individuals. Be very, very careful. My advice would be to avoid gold, silver, and precious metals completely. The second type of investments is antiques, Persian carpets, coins, stamps, and other collectibles such as baseball cards. Yes, it is true that this type of investment goes up, but it also goes down. The people who are the most successful in trading in these areas are the ones who sell the antiques, Persian carpets, coins, stamps, and baseball cards to you. Unless you are an expert, this is not a place to invest. The third area is oil and gas stocks, mining stocks, and penny stocks. While there are very solid operators in oil and gas and mining, there are also many questionable vendors in this type of investment. With regard to penny stocks, fully 80 to 90% of penny stocks never recover to the price at which they are initially sold. They are the greatest waste of investment capital in America. If someone calls you up with a wonderful success story about penny stocks, hang up the phone. The fourth type of investment that you read about is commodities. Trading in the commodities market is one of the biggest of all gambles. Reputable stock brokerage firms require that you demonstrate to them that you have at least $25,000 to lose before they will take your account, and you can be sure of one thing: you are going to lose the money. Even the most sophisticated commodity traders in the world lose money every single day, so stay away from commodities unless you're willing to make it a full-time life commitment. Your primary rule for investment must be, don't lose money. It is better to keep your hard-earned money in an interest-bearing account than it is to lose it. Study after study shows that if you simply leave your money at interest and let it compound over the course of your working lifetime, you will be further ahead than in almost any other investment. The rich in America are all financially conservative, and they have low levels of debt. They handle their money with care, and they continue to look for ways to increase it by minimizing risk. Learn from them and do what they do. The first step to becoming wealthy is to earn the money. The second step is to hold on to it. Be careful. In this program so far, we focused on the ways that most people become wealthy in America: by providing a needed product or service of good quality at a fair price, by adding value in some way, and then by finding better, faster, cheaper ways to do it again for more people. In this final session, we'll talk about three other pathways to affluence. Number one, working your way up in a successful company. Fully 10% of self-made millionaires in America have worked for another company all their lives, and they became wealthy by being paid very, very well, and as we've said before, by holding on to the money. A second way you can become wealthy is by becoming excellent in the professions of law or medicine. Fully 10% of self-made millionaires in America are professionals who are at the top of their fields and are paid very well for what they do. And the third way you can become a self-made millionaire, fully 5% of self-made millionaires fall into this category, is by becoming a superstar in selling. By joining the top 1 or 2% of salespeople in your field, working hard, making a very good living, and then holding on to the money and investing it carefully as you go along. The most important rule for success in each of these areas, however, is simply to do what you love to do. Let me repeat that. Do what you love to do. We find over and over again the successful people in every field are doing something that they really love, that they really enjoy, that they really get a lot of fun and satisfaction out of. So find the area of specialization or work that you really care about. Then throw your whole heart into becoming excellent at what you do. The rest will take care of itself. For example, to become outstanding in sales requires a long period of persistent, continuous effort. You must read all the books, listen to all the audio cassettes, attend all the seminars and lectures. Sometimes one small idea or change in your approach or way of doing things can change the direction of your career. The top people in every field are simply those who have taken the time to learn what they need to know to be superior to the competition. If you want to have a superior life, you have to be better than the other people in your field. It's very possible for you to become wealthy working for someone else. Many senior executives earn more than $100,000 a year, and some earn much, much more. Even at $25,000 per year, if you save 10% per year, or $2,500 a year, from the age of 25 to the age of 65, you'll become a millionaire. So even at a relatively low level of salary over the course of your working lifetime, if you put away 10% and never spend it, you can become a millionaire. If you start earning $35,000 and $45,000 and $55,000 and more, the chances of you becoming a millionaire or multimillionaire with a long-term savings program are greatly enhanced. Not everyone can or should be an entrepreneur. You may be perfectly suited to helping to build a corporation. If so, here are some ideas that you can use to put your career onto the fast track. Number one, top of the list, is make yourself indispensable. You'll always be paid in direct proportion to what you do, how well you do it, and the difficulty of replacing you. Concentrate on becoming so valuable and so important to your company that the company can't do without you. A second way to put your career onto the fast track is to remember that hard, hard work is one of the most important behaviors of successful people. Start early, work harder, stay later. Hard, hard work will bring you to the attention of your superiors faster than any other single thing that you can do. And always opportunities for promotion, advancement, greater responsibility, greater training and education goes to the person who is willing to put in the extra time and the extra hours. The average executive work week in America or Canada is 60 hours, not the 40 hours that most people have become accustomed to. If you want to enjoy an executive lifestyle, you have to be willing to put in the extra hours. And because of the law of sowing and reaping, you have to be willing to put in the hours for a long time, months, even years in advance, before you start to reap the rewards that go with it. A third thing that you can do to put your career onto the fast track is to accept responsibility and take charge, especially of those jobs that your boss dislikes. Remember, there's a one-to-one relationship between the amount of responsibility that you are willing to accept for results and the amount of power, influence, status, prestige, and pay that you can achieve in any organization. Accepting responsibility for jobs that your boss considers really important, or jobs that nobody else wants to do, or jobs that are essential to the functioning of the organization is a key way to move yourself onto the fast track. Remember the 80-20 rule. 20% of what you do will account for 80% of your results. 20% of the jobs that you take on will account for 80% of your promotability and your pay. A fourth technique for putting your career onto the fast track is called the niche strategy. And a lot of research has been done on this, and it concludes that one of the best techniques to move yourself ahead is to work yourself into a job that is critical to the success of the business or the organization that you work for. Cash flow is the lifeblood of an organization. Any interruption of cash flow can threaten the survival of the organization. So your job is to identify the most important function in the company's operations as it affects cash flow, and then work yourself into a vital position in that area of operations. Now, there are six areas of operations in most organizations, any one of which can be the key area or the vital area for cash flow. The first, for most organizations, is marketing and sales. Most companies depend for their very survival on a continuous flow of sales, on a continual success in the marketing department. If marketing and sales is the key area in your company and you want to get ahead rapidly in your company, what you need to do is work yourself into a position in marketing and sales, do an excellent job, and become indispensable in that area. The second area is finance. Some companies depend for their survival on the ability to raise money in the financial markets. The people who are the most capable of raising money, dealing with financial sources, dealing with banks, and so on, become the vital resources within the organization. The third is in the area of production. In a study applying the niche strategy to a brewery a few years ago, they found that the most important job in the entire brewery was that of chief maintenance engineer. Why? It's because the market for the beer that they were producing was largely fixed. The distribution channels were largely fixed. The price was largely fixed. The key to success was consistent production. So if anything broke down in the plant, it brought the whole brewery to a halt and cut off cash flow. So the chief maintenance engineer in the brewery was more important than the president. The fourth niche in some organizations is the distribution channels. For instance, automobile manufacturers require a dealership network in order to generate continuous cash flow. Many organizations depend for their very success on their distribution channels. If that's the key to your organization's success, then that could be the niche that you should be in, working with the distribution channels, becoming vital in the distribution part of the business. The fifth area, and this happens in some large organizations, is in labor relations. Sometimes the success of the organization is based entirely on its ability to keep its labor force working. So a person who is excellent in labor relations can often become vital to the success of the business. And the sixth area is in government relations. I worked with a large national real estate development company some years ago whose very success was totally determined on the approval of regulatory bodies in Washington and in various states. So one of the most vital positions in the company was the person who interfaced or interacted with government regulatory officials to assure that the company could continue developing and marketing its product. Whatever the niche is in your organization, one of the fastest ways to get ahead in any business is to work yourself into the area of operations that is vital for cash flow, vital for success of the business, become excellent and indispensable in that field, and you'd be amazed at how much more rapidly you can be promoted and paid the kind of money that you want. Now, the fifth principle to put your career on the fast track is that knowledge is power. Specialized knowledge or skills in a vital area enhances your promotability. Control of vital information is power. So here's the rule. Learn all you can in your chosen job, but never tell all you know. Learn all you can, never tell all you know. Now, this doesn't mean that you hold back information. It just means that you take the time to become extremely knowledgeable about your job. Give the information when it's asked, but if it's not asked for, keep the information to yourself. The more proprietary information you have that is vital to the success of your position in your company, the more important you are to the company, the more rapidly you'll be promoted, the more you'll be paid. The sixth thing you can do to put your career onto the fast track is to develop a sense of urgency. Move fast on opportunities. Get the job done quickly. Become known as the person who gets things done fast. This, above almost any other thing you can do, will move your career ahead. You'll get more opportunities to take on more responsibilities by having a sense of urgency and being the fastest, hardest worker in the organization than perhaps anything else you can imagine. The seventh thing that you can do, and this is terribly important in business today, is to network, which means to spend time with people inside and outside of your company. In a recent study, they compared successful managers to effective managers. Effective managers were defined as managers who got the job done. Successful managers were defined as those who got promoted rapidly. And they looked at the time usage of both groups of managers. They found that effective managers, those who got the job done, spent about 14% of their time networking and interacting with people inside and outside of their own department and their own company. However, successful managers, those who got promoted rapidly, spent 54% of their time networking. They had breakfasts with people, they had lunches with people, they went to meetings in the evening, they joined professional associations, they fraternized and socialized with people within their business and outside their business, and they became known to a great number of people. In fact, I've come to the conclusion that the more people you know and who know you in a favorable way, the more successful you're going to be in your career. So here's some ideas. First is join your professional association, join your chamber of commerce or board of trade, join your business organization and get involved. Don't just pay your dues and attend meetings. Get involved, volunteer to serve on a key committee. Look at the various committees and look who sits on those committees and ask yourself, what individuals who belong to this trade organization or association would it be useful or helpful for me to know? Look at the people on those committees and join the committee and volunteer, take responsibility on one of those committees, working with people on a non-threatening, non-competitive basis who can help you in the future. One of the best formulas for success that I've ever read is very simple. It's T times R equals P, where T equals talents times R, which equals relationships, equals P, which equals productivity or the amount of money that you'll be paid. This formula really explains the success of so many people, that your talents multiplied times the relationships or the number of people that you know equals your productivity, your performance, your effectiveness, your pay, your promotion, and your rewards in life. So the more people you can meet multiplied by the greater talents that you can develop, the more successful you're going to be. The third point is to reaffirm that the quality and the quantity of the people you know and who know you in a positive way will largely determine your success in business and in life for that matter. Now, if you're a bit hesitant about meeting people, learn how to speak on your feet. This is number 8. Join Toastmasters. Pick up your telephone book, look under Toastmasters or organizations and associations in the yellow pages, call the phone number there, attend a Toastmasters meeting, and learn how to speak on your feet. Take a Dale Carnegie course. Dale Carnegie has one of the finest courses in America on learning how to speak on your feet. Read books. Listen to audio cassettes on speaking effectively. What we have found is this, that a person who overcomes the fear of public speaking and can speak competently and confidently to a group of people becomes a far more effective and dynamic person in one-on-one conversation. So if you're a little bit shy or a little bit uneasy or a little bit hesitant about meeting new people, make a decision to overcome that. That alone can cause you to work an extra 10 or 20 years to get to where you want to go. But becoming excellent on your feet is really interesting because if you can speak well on your feet, people always have a tendency to think that you are smarter, more knowledgeable, and more competent than a person who cannot. And one final point is many people's careers are held back, and they don't even know why, because they cannot speak effectively to a group of people. So learn how to speak on your feet, and that alone can be a key to advancing your career. The ninth thing that you can do to put your career onto the fast track is, as we've said before, to commit to excellence. Go the extra mile. Make the decision to be the best at what you do. Make the decision to join the top 5% in your field. And here's a rule. If you don't like what you're doing enough to want to be the best at it, it may be that you're in the wrong job or the wrong career. Let me repeat that. If you don't like what you're doing enough to want to be the best at it, to want to pay the price, to be excited about putting in the hours to become really good at what you do, it could be that you're in the wrong career. And as we said earlier, one of the biggest mistakes that you can possibly make in your career is to do the wrong job. The tenth thing you can do to put yourself on the fast track is to become a good time manager and to develop productive work skills. Remember, you'll always be paid for the quality and the quantity of your contribution. The focus on contribution is the hallmark of personal effectiveness. So always ask yourself, why are you on the payroll? What have you been hired to accomplish? What results are expected of you? What can you and only you do that, if done really well, will make a real difference to yourself and to your company? These are the questions that keep you focused on your key result areas. Remember, most people are poor time managers, working at 50% or less of capacity. Most people are time wasters. They waste their own time and they waste the time of others. And you cannot afford that to be a description of you if you want to be on the fast track. Principle number 11 to get on the fast track is to build a power base. Use what is called the law of reciprocity. The law of reciprocity says that people will be willing to help you achieve your goals to the degree to which you help them achieve their goals. Practice the golden rule. Find ways to be of service to people who can help you. And here's a technique. Make a list of all the people it would be useful for you to know, and then think of how you could help each one of them, how you could do a favor for each one of them. How could you put them in your debt? Make a list of all the people that can help you and then develop a strategy of sowing and reaping. How could you sow favors, kindnesses, help, assistance in such a way that should the time come, they would be predisposed to helping you? All power in America is based on the law of reciprocity. It's based on doing things for others in the anticipation that sometime later they will help you back. Now, the 12th thing you can do to put yourself on the fast track, and some people say it's the most important of all, is to practice impeccable integrity, to guard your integrity as a sacred thing. Integrity is perhaps the most important quality for success in leadership because of the following. First, trust is the basis of all relationships. Trust is the basis of relationships at work. Trust is the basis of relationships with your family. Trust is the basis of relationships with your friends, with your bankers, suppliers, customers, superiors, subordinates, and so on. Trust is critical, and trust is very fragile. It's based on absolute, dependable, consistent, and predictable integrity on your part. The key to trust with others is trusting yourself, and the key to trusting yourself is to be true to yourself. Remember what Shakespeare said, "To thine own self be true, and then it must follow as the night the day. Thou canst not then be false to any man." To be true to yourself means being true to the very best that is in you. Keep your word. Follow through on your promises. Do what you say you will do. The strength of a man's character is when it costs him money to follow through on his promises. Live your life consistent with your innermost values and convictions, and practice the universal maxim of the philosopher Immanuel Kant, to live your whole life as though everything you were to do or say were to become a universal law. Do it this way. Ask this question. What kind of a company would my company be if everybody in it were just like me? Or what kind of a family would my family be if everybody in it were just like me? Or if you want to broaden the question, say, what kind of a country would my country be if everybody in it were just like me? And if you set that as your standard for integrity, as your standard for behavior and conduct, you'll find that that, as much as anything else, can not only put you on the fast track in your career, but can make you an outstanding human being. All good leaders were once good followers. If you work on your gifts and your abilities, they will make way for you. In other words, it doesn't matter where you're starting. Do you remember the parable of the talents in the Bible, which said, "O good and faithful servant, ye have been faithful over small things, I will make you master over many." There is a great life lesson in that. You have been faithful over small things, I will make you master over many. Every great leader was once a young, small follower who was faithful over small things, who worked on his or her abilities, talents, gifts, and opportunities, and worked on them right where he or she was, and as a result became better and better, and finally rose to a position of leadership. The aim of this program has been to convince you that you too can become wealthy, just like millions of others. You can start right where you are, right now, and go to work on yourself. You can start saving at least 10% of your income and pay off your debts. You can start putting your whole heart into what you're doing right now. You can commit yourself to becoming excellent in your chosen field. You can go the extra mile. You can be willing to do whatever it takes to make any effort, any sacrifice, to achieve your dreams. You can become wealthy during the course of your working lifetime by studying what others have done, and then by doing the same things over and over until you get the same results. If a mentally retarded boy saving $100 per month can become a millionaire repairing furniture in a group home, then surely you can do at least as well, if not much, much better. You can do it. The starting point of all financial success is simply to develop a prosperity consciousness. Write and rewrite your goals over and over. Make detailed plans of action and work your plans one day at a time. Visualize yourself as the great success you will someday be. See yourself, feel yourself experiencing the joy and pleasure of great achievement. All the thinking of the great minds of history has concluded that your life is merely the outward expression of your beliefs, your thinking. There are no obstacles to success outside of you. All barriers to accomplishment exist only on the inside in the form of fear and ignorance. So decide right now, today, this minute, to do something wonderful with your life. You can do great things with financial success, but first, you have to achieve it. If you will begin practicing some of the ideas in this program, you can launch yourself toward financial independence. You can become one of the affluent in America. You can have the house, the car, the lifestyle, the inner satisfaction, the pride, the self-esteem. It's all up to you. You can do it, and I hope you do. Good luck.